The Tom Woods Show, episode 838.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you men out there, it's time to graduate from the $99 clearance rack at Sears. Get a made-to-measure suit from Indochino, and heads will turn. This week, my listeners can get 50% off a made-to-measure suit. That's just $389 at Indochino.com when you use code WOODS. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Eric Peters is back with us again. Every time enough car news accumulates, I think, well, time to talk to Eric again. I love talking to him. He's a great guy. He knows what he's talking about. And he's the kind of guest who, when people look at the episode title and they say, I'm not so sure I'm interested in this topic, by the time they're done listening to Eric Peters, they are scolding themselves. How could you ever have thought this would not be a good decision to make, clicking play on this episode? Eric, of course, runs ericpetersautos.com, which is also abbreviated as epautos.com. It's a fantastic site. I actually donate to Eric every month. Even though I'm not a car expert by any means or even a car aficionado, really, but I know that what he's doing is really important and I want to support it. So I actually make a monthly donation to that site. I recommend you join me, ericpetersautos.com. Eric, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Let's talk about how Donald Trump is going to affect your world of cars. Is there anything that he's, any indication that he's given already, or are there any hopes that you have, any fears that are now dashed because Hillary's not in there? Tell me what you're thinking.
I'm actually excited. Just the other day, words came out of President Trump's mouth that I don't think we would have heard come out of a President Hillary's mouth. Those words were out of control and environmentalism. Can you imagine Hillary saying those words?
Oh, that hasn't been said probably since the 80s or 90s, actually.
Right. And he followed that up with a proposed regulatory freeze and then a hiring freeze on new federal workers. And I put that in air quotes for the obvious reasons.
Yeah. So that's a good sign for you.
I think it's a stupendous sign. And, you know, they're flipping out in D.C. at the EPA because his appointment, Scott Pruitt, is somebody who is a denier, a skeptic of global warming. Now, they don't even call it global warming anymore. Now they call it climate change, which, in my opinion, really ought to tell a thinking person something. It's a slippery, oily term. Hey, the climate has changed. Oh, therefore, there must be a catastrophe looming. We must give Washington more power.
So what would be, other than this initial stuff, what would be your wish list, let's say, if you, regardless of whether it's politically possible? What's your wish list?
Well, there are two things. One, I would like to see cost-benefit analysis done, mandated, required, of the EPA for any future proposed emissions regulations. You and I have discussed this before. Objectively, we've reached the point of diminishing returns with regard to what can be done with internal combustion engines. They are now so clean that making them any cleaner involves fractional, negligible, meaningless reductions at the tailpipe at ever-increasing cost. I think it's important that if the EPA is proposing something, that they have to demonstrate that, look, this is going to have a meaningful effect, not a bureaucratic effect, that it's going to comply with a tier or a bin, and that's the language that they use, but actually will have a demonstrable, tangible, meaningful effect in terms of reducing pollution, if there is a problem. And if not, then it's not to be justified. That's the first thing that I would like to see. The second thing that I would like to see is that the government get out of the business of legislating things like fuel efficiency and safety. Those two things are values, but they're values that ought to be up to the people who are buying the cars and not up to bureaucrats in Washington.
Along these lines, let's talk about, you have a piece, and of course, ericpetersautos.com or epautos.com is where people should go to read all this stuff. But you have a piece called The Crazy Thing Trump Could Do. Mm-hmm. And as you lay out what the crazy thing Trump could do is, you then tell the story of Preston Tucker.
Yep.
And his idea for a better Model T.
Yep.
So first, tell me, what's the crazy thing Trump could do? But secondly, tell us that story of Tucker. Is this the same? This is the same Tucker from the movie?
Yeah, Preston Tucker, and of course the famous Tucker car, which most people, even people who aren't car people, can recognize. It was a very sleek and dramatic looking car for its time, 1948, just after the end of the war. that had a Cyclops center headlight that actually turned with the steering wheel. And the interesting thing about the Tucker, you know, we're constantly told that if it weren't for the government, we wouldn't have safe cars. The evil corporations would make death traps, and they wouldn't want to offer safe things to the public. And it's absolute nonsense. The Tucker car was a car that was designed specifically to be safe, and that was one of the things that it touted, from the central headlight that moved with the steering wheel to crumple zones in the car to the very first application of a safety glass windshield that was designed to pop out in the event of a crash, a collapsible steering wheel, disc brakes, seat belts, and a variety of other things. And related to that, we have the example of Volvo. Volvo built the entire company on safety. So this idea that we wouldn't have safe cars were it not for the government is just a bunch of nonsense. Safety is a value just like performance or good looks. Those things are also values, but people have different values in different degrees. And my point of view is that people should have the opportunity, the freedom, to choose the balance that strikes them as best.
Before we go into any more controversial stuff, not controversial for us, but by American standards, controversial, the model years for some cars, it varies. I mean, in terms of when you can expect the brand new one to come out, like the new this or that might be out by...
It's decreasing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's decreasing chiefly because of the real crazy ratcheting up of, once again, all of these federal mandates that keep snowballing out of D.C. They design and build a car, let's say, and it's compliant with model year 2017 federal crash standards, federal emission standards. But then the government, 2 years later, passes new emissions and new safety standards, and the old car, the existing car, either it doesn't comply or it would be too expensive to make it comply. So rather than do that, they're constantly trying to update their cars. So now the term within the business is called the product cycle, and it used to be much longer. It used to be fairly typical for a car when it was new to remain on the market largely the same, with minor tweaks and changes here and there, but largely the same for 8 and sometimes even 10 years. Now the product cycle is down to 4 years and even 3 years. And in between that, they have refreshes. That's the other term that they use, about every 2 years.
Well, I'm asking about this in particular because I'm just wondering if since the last time you and I spoke, which is probably a couple months now, mm-hmm. have there been cars that have been rolled out that hadn't been rolled out before that impress you in some way, whether value or performance or anything that people might want to know about?
Yeah, actually, this is an interesting juxtaposition. It just happened that last week I had two cars to evaluate. I had a Ford Fusion Hybrid, and I had a Hyundai Elantra with what Hyundai markets as their Eco engine. And essentially what that is a very small gas engine that has a turbocharger on it. And I found in driving the two cars that the Hyundai actually got about the same mileage as the much more expensive, much more complicated hybrid Fusion, which has 400 extra pounds of electric batteries and electric motor to cart around. And it's also considerably more expensive for just that reason. It has all of this additional equipment. So the take-home point here is that you can now find a number of cars, Hyundai's not the only manufacturer that does this, that offer, and they typically market them under this Eco name, ECO, that have small four-cylinder engines or even three-cylinder engines that are turbocharged and deliver phenomenal gas mileage without the cost, the complexity, and the weight of the hybrid powertrain.
I noticed that I've been sort of a Hyundai booster over the years. Anyway, because we've owned four of them now that I think about it.
They're great cars.
I haven't had a single problem. Well, did have the first car we had from them was a Hyundai Accent, which is their low-end car.
Yep.
And for some reason, that thing was not getting us more than 20 miles to the gallon, barely 20 miles to the gallon, and it weighs about 5 pounds.
Yep.
We tried every remedy under the sun to fix this until finally the remedy was sell it to some other sucker because there's nothing we can do about this. We loved the way it drove, but we couldn't understand why it was obviously underperforming on mileage. But I got the Sonata back in the early 2000s, and it's just, I may have said it on episodes with you before, but it is much more car than you have a right to expect based on the price.
Yep.
It had a better audio system. Then a couple years later, I splurged for a few years and had a BMW,
mm-hmm.
and that came with a worse audio system.
Yes.
Than the Sonata came with. So I later went back to a Hyundai Sonata. I love the way it drove, whatever. So now I have a Santa Fe. I've never had any real problem with them, and I like them, and they've been doing great. I'm looking on your site. You have reviewed several other cars. You've got a Kia that you're talking about, but let's talk about what's the story about the Mustang? Because apparently this is driving you a little nuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, at the Detroit Auto Show a few days ago, Ford announced that it is going to offer for sale a hybrid version of the Mustang. And at the same time, it's going to cancel the entry-level V6 that was standard in the car. So now you'll have your choice between the turbo four-cylinder, the V8 GT, and a hybrid. And it just strikes me as beyond demented to make a hybrid version of the Mustang, other than, and this is the true reason, which Ford won't talk about, to placate the politically correct powers in Washington. That's what all of this is about. It makes absolutely no sense from an economic point of view. It makes no sense from a performance point of view. They're just doing it for the sake of appearing green and placating Washington, and I guess appealing to people who want to wear their greenness on their sleeves by touting that they have a hybrid.
Okay, but now that the regime has changed a bit, could it be that they kind of wish they hadn't gone this route, or are they so PC that come what may, this is what they're doing?
Well, they're stuck now. They made the investment. You know, having announced it, that means that they've already committed to producing it. You know, they've already built the drivetrain, and I'm sure, and have invested in the tooling and everything else to put this in the car. So they're going to build it. Whether anybody will buy it is another question. Now, it's important to point out, all of the hybrids on the market right now, with the exception of one, are conversions. They are cars that were designed to be internal combustion engine powered cars, and they were converted into a hybrid. And that is just a dumb idea, because what you end up with is a vehicle that's heavy and that has conflicting mandates. In the case of the Mustang, people who buy Mustangs generally don't want a slow car, right? And they don't want a car that doesn't handle particularly well. Well, that's at cross purposes with the hybrid layout. The hybrid adds weight, and it tends to unbalance the car. The weight makes it perform less, or if you want to make it perform better, then you have to increase the power of the electric motors or the battery or the gas engine. That defeats the purpose of having the hybrid, which is efficiency. The only hybrid on the market that makes any sense, in my opinion, at all, is the Prius, and the Prius is the only hybrid on the market that was designed from the lug nuts up to be a hybrid. Therefore, it's extremely light for what it is. And its focus, its mandate, is on maximizing gas mileage to the exclusion of all other considerations. So it's fairly slow for a new car. It doesn't handle particularly well. It's not designed for that. It's designed to give you 50-plus miles per gallon no matter how you drive it, and it does do that. But it's the only one like that.
I want to get your comments on that Rothbard article from the mid-1970s that I sent you.
Yeah.
And we'll do that after we thank our sponsor. When you're wearing a suit, you're trying to look your best, and one way to screw that up is to be wearing a suit that doesn't quite fit right. Well, how can you make sure your suit does fit right and you look like somebody who's totally in command rather than some clueless loser? The answer is to get a made-to-measure suit. Indochino is one of the largest made-to-measure menswear brands. They'll make you a high-quality suit to your exact measurements. You can customize the suit just the way you want it. It's easy to do online, as I can tell you from personal experience. You will feel like the master of the universe. And what's more, you don't have to pay a fortune. This week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when you enter Woods at checkout. Plus, you don't pay nothing for shipping. $389 and free shipping. That's Indochino.com using promo code WOODS. All right, as I was saying, I actually had somebody from my supporting listeners group post this link to an article from Murray Rothbard's newsletter, The Libertarian Forum, and he said, would you consider inviting Eric Peters on to comment on this? And I thought, I am so far ahead of you. I already got Eric Peters coming on. This is a fantastic coincidence. And you had a chance to look at that piece, I think,
I did,
based on the email that I saw. So tell people what's in there. That was a very unusual article.
Yeah, it goes back, I think, to 1975, and apparently, this is the first I'd heard of it, and there's new things all the time. You think you know everything, particularly in your own little area, but I had not heard this particular story. Apparently, there was a woman who had promised that she was going to bring out a revolutionary car. She was a kind of a quasi-Dagny Taggart kind of a character, and this car was supposed to be very inexpensive, and I think it was supposed to get 60 or 70 miles per gallon, and it turned out to be a gigantic scam, and apparently she defrauded a bunch of people. That's the gist of it that I got. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And the fact that there are con artists out there, though, in my mind, no way delegitimizes or tells you that such things are not possible. Right now, there's a real-life analog to that. We've talked about it, I think, you and I, the Elioi car that's on the verge of being produced. And it's also a small three-wheeler that's going to have a price of around $8,000 once it's out. And it should get 70 to 80 miles per gallon. Now, it's basically an enclosed motorcycle, and that's how they're getting around some of the safety and other regulations. But nonetheless, it would make a great little commuter car. They have working prototypes. I've seen the working prototypes, so it's not a scam. It's just a question of whether they're going to be able to build them in view of the federal regulations. There's that. And we also have the fact that in Europe, major manufacturers like Volkswagen, for example, produce in huge numbers small, inexpensive cars that get 60, 70, 80 miles per gallon, but they can't be sold here, again, because of the various federal regulations that make it impossible for them to do so.
I want to shift to something else, because when we talk to you, it's always a sort of potpourri episode, because you have so many posts up that I want to talk about at ericpetersautos.com. Mm-hmm. And one of them has to do with, if you'll forgive me, the Cadillac Escalade. We've all seen these. Whether you're a car person or not, one thing I like about my listeners is they give the episodes a chance. Because I have some listeners who just couldn't care less about cars, and I've had them, it's so funny, in the supporting listeners group, they say, you know, I go ahead and I listen anyway, and I'm shocked at how much I'm enjoying it in spite of the fact that I thought I didn't care about cars. That's uh-huh. wonderful and glorious. Well, uh-huh. I don't know a lot about cars, but I do know that I see Cadillac Escalades on the road, and I think, what kind of a crazy vehicle is this? And mm-hmm. just for the heck of it, I wanted to look up the sticker price, and it's in the 70s, $1,000. So
over 100 if you get it loaded.
Oh, really? Really?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I want to know what I would have to load it up with to basically increase the price by a third. So hold that in reserve in your answer.
Okay.
But I want to know, because you have a post about this. First of all, you like it.
Yes.
You say you call it ridiculous and whatever, but
sure.
You say, but you know what? It's glorious. So I want to know the merits of this thing. And also, apparently you said that it's an totally un-PC car. So they've they've made some kind of, acknowledgement of the need to live up to PC expectations in the 17 model. Tell me everything you can tell me about the Cadillac Escalade. I'm so curious about this thing when I see it. I think, who's driving this thing?
Well, I mean, you remember, we talk about the golden age of the car. Even non-car people probably can remember, the Series 62 Cadillacs with the big fins that Elvis drove. The letter series Chryslers from the same period, Lincoln Continentals. Most people who aren't even car people, they see one of those and they'll turn and they'll look at it and they go, my God, and it's ostentatious and it's outrageous and it's exuberant and it's joyful. And isn't that part of what America is supposed to be about? I mean, you may not want to drive one yourself, but it's neat that such things are available. You contrast that with East Germany, and you see the proles driving their little Trabants, if they're able to drive anything at all, and it's depressing. It's black and white. There's no color. It's sad, and it's a contrast. One of the things that told you America was a special place was that you could get a car like that. If you had the money and you wanted to indulge in something just ludicrous, outrageous, outsized, gaudy, overpowered, more than you need, excessive, there you go. There it is. And I think that's a glorious, great thing about the country. That's my first initial thought about it. The second thing is, it actually is a useful vehicle. It's capable of seating 9 people if you've got a big family, if you've got a lot of friends, captain's chairs. It's got its own built-in coolers. It's got its own heaters for beverages. It's got multiple DVD flat screens. Everybody can watch their own show.
Oh, come on. I gotta save up for one of these then.
You got to save up for one of them. they put the same engine is in that thing, basically, that powers the current Corvette Stingray. 420 horsepower. in a big bus like that, and it moves. It's a physics-defying 6,000-pound wonder. With that engine, the thing can get to 60 in less than 6 seconds, if you can imagine that.
Well, how many does it hold?
It holds, depending on the seating configuration, you can get it with the individual captain's chairs, you can get it with the bench across if you like, and you can get, and we were talking earlier about the $100,000 version, they sell something called the EXT, which is based on the Suburban rather than the Tahoe, so it's longer and bigger, and it has the additional room in it, and, you know, then you can order various other features and equipment with it, but bottom line, you can put 7 to 9 people in that thing.
Ah, okay, because I need at least 7.
Yeah.
That's non-negotiable. That's assuming we have no friends.
If the apocalypse should come, you know, that's just the ticket for, you know, bashing your way through the zombie hordes and getting back out to the country.
Wow. Okay. But, you know, I can't imagine doing it.
Of course, I don't have 100.
It's like it has drug dealer written all over it, some of the designs,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. Tell me what else has been. I'm sorry I had to do that. That's a digression that I'm entitled to as the host. Tell me what else has been controversial in the world of cars over the past couple of months.
Well, I think, let's see. There's something that's always interested me. This, you probably have been following in the news, this Takata airbag fiasco. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
Okay. I think it is the biggest single automotive recall in the history of cars. It affects millions of vehicles. Takata is a major supplier that supplied airbags not just to the major Japanese brands, Honda and Toyota, but also to a number of American brand cars as well. And these bags were defective. And what happened? What would happen is that the bag would go off, and it would literally act as a Claymore mine and spray shrapnel as it deployed. And people have been killed and mauled by these bags. And what's interesting to me about it is that here you have something that was mandated by the government, the airbag, that is demonstrably not safe, that objectively causes harm, that hurts real people, kills real people, and there's no hue and cry about that at all. And when there's some minor hypothetical risk or something that involves a handful of people being hurt, there's just this uproar about, oh, we must pass a law. There must be something done about it. The contra example I would put out is there were a few incidents nationwide of people backing up over kids. You may have heard about those. And as a result of that, the government passed a law requiring that every new car be equipped with a backup camera. So now you get to pay for a backup camera in your new car, because I think it's 2 or 3 people. I mean, a very, very small number of people did this, managed to not pay attention to the fact that their kid was back behind the car and backed up over the kid. So that's the cause for an eruption. But when the government does something that results in real harm to lots of people, potentially millions of people, nobody's held accountable for that, and nobody really says anything about it. And it's interesting to me.
Eric, one other thing that I would like to get your opinion on. Very, very close to the end of Obama's term, there was some kind of an edict that came out, or a regulation, or a judge's order, or something, classifying carbon dioxide as a pollutant,
right?
Which therefore has some consequences for automobile regulation. What's the deal with that, and what do you hope or expect to see done about that?
Well, first, what was done was, in my opinion, very anti-democratic, really shady. The decision was supposed to have come as to whether carbon dioxide should be classified as an emission subject to regulation similar to unburned hydrocarbons, particulates, and so on. That decision was supposed to have come down sometime in 2018 after a period of public comment. Well, Obama's EPA, apparently reading the tea leaves and being concerned that Trump would win, went ahead on its own and issued I call it a fatwa, just prior to his leaving office, which is pretty shady and despicable, frankly. They just went ahead and jumped the gun on that. But it's a scientifically illiterate and economically very dangerous thing. Carbon dioxide, it is a non-reactive, inert gas. It plays no role whatsoever in smog formation, has nothing to do with breathing, respiratory problems, does not cause acid rain. All of those things were the reasons why other tailpipe exhaust emissions were regulated by the EPA. Now, if you believe in climate change, then it is harmful. But again, there is definitely room to be skeptical about that. Now, from an economic point of view, what's problematic about it is that you can't reduce CO2 without reducing the size of the engine, the amount of fuel that's burned. So it is going to have potentially catastrophic effects on the car industry and on the economy generally if it's not rescinded. And my hope is that Trump is going to revisit that issue and rescind the thing.
All right. Well, I want to urge people to check out, of course, Eric Peters Autos. You can get there via the shortcut, epautos.com. I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/838. We'll link to a few of the items that we talked about, including that somewhat oddball Rothbard article. So always fun and always plenty of stuff to talk about. I'm looking forward to, I won't spill the beans about it, but I'm really looking forward to that ebook that you're working on. We'll definitely get that out to everybody as soon as it's ready. But as always, Eric, thanks for your time and always fun chatting.
Thanks, Tom. Same here.
All right. For those of you who do not listen to Contra Krugman, my sister podcast that runs once a week with Bob Murphy, you may not have heard the announcement. We are, in fact, doing another Contra Cruise. This one, October 15th through the 22nd, aboard Royal Caribbean's Oasis of the Seas, departing from Port Canaveral in Florida, which is about an hour from my house. And it's going to be fantastic. We had so much fun last year on the last one. Everybody who went will tell you. We have unbelievable testimonials. It was an absolute blast, all the different things we did. You can actually watch a little video that shows you exactly how much fun we had. It's up at ContraCruise.com. Do check that out. I know it's a bit in the future, but you want to reserve your spot quickly. You get a nice little fast action bonus if you reserve your spot quickly. It is a ton of fun. You are not going to be sorry you did this. Plus, Bob and I will, as the weeks go by, be announcing several special guests who will be joining us on this cruise, the 2017 one. And I know these are people you are going to be thrilled to have the opportunity to spend time with. So grab your spot at ContraCruise.com, and I will see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.